Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. This is Solutions Today. I'm your host, Bill. And I just want to say it's a wonderful thing to be heading into the holiday season. It always seems like it catches up with us, and it's something that it's always a time of year I really enjoy and get a kick out of, and the whole aesthetics of it, it just has a it's one of those holidays, I think, that has become so festive. In the United States, at least, and in Europe, I'm sure. It's definitely part of Western culture, and I sometimes think we lose the meaning of the religious aspects of it, and I certainly have, because it becomes more about family, celebration, and festivities, and you're almost blind to it. So it almost camouflages the religious aspects to it. Even people that tend to be religious seems to slip into this festive party move, and I think they sometimes that becomes more important than other, certainly the reason for it and why it's called Christmas. But as we're heading into this holiday season, and this is a Brain Injury Network, I was looking to just make it a celebratory. I even thought, like last year, I might have some guests and just make this a happy time. Particularly last year, as we were in the middle of Corona, I felt it was necessary. This year, I'm going to be a little more brain injury related, clinical about it, because of some observations I've had in my own life. And this goes to the larger issue of any of us who are suffering from a TBI or a brain injury and what this can mean. And, of course, this separates it from the normal emotional aspects that sometimes holidays can have. Often people get depressed around holidays that don't have a brain injury just because of the inundated with the gifts and stuff like that. People get overwhelmed, and it becomes more of a competition like any other than just a festive holiday. And separate from that, and I'm fortunate I live in a family that's never been overly materialistic, and so that's never been a big factor in terms of our holiday celebration going back. And for me, the holiday, since I'm from New York, always has in and of itself a whole celebration aspect. It's always been a wonder for me. And of course, during a couple of those holidays, I lost two people very close to me. So there was about 10 years here where I didn't even want to celebrate Christmas. And matter of fact, my mom wouldn't do it in the last years of her life, partly because my father, her stepfather, died around that time. And then my mother, soon after the last visit I had with her, was in a very emotional thing around the Christmas holidays, and she was gone a month later. So from that point on, in 2010 and 11, I wanted no part of Christmas holidays, and I didn't celebrate it. Now I've been getting back into it, and I'm settled a bit. I'm still grieved on that, but it's it's and because my mother particularly, and in that New York atmosphere, that was my Christmas holiday. And New York has a special place because of the area it's in, and also because of some of the things they do in New York. That is unique to New York. That makes it part of that celebration. But needless to say, as a TBI survivor, the coming of all the holidays, including Thanksgiving and other ones at other times of year, Christmas is some of the biggest times. And it's a concern that I became very much aware of in my last celebration, which is Thanksgiving of this year. And not that it was anything bad. As a matter of fact, it was a wondrous holiday in which I celebrated with my family here in Georgia. And it was just, I was up early. I met one of my cousins with her daughter on the way up. It was wondrous to see them all. It was joyful. I engaged with some of the young kids, which is just a total pleasure. And I managed to partake in with each relative on many separate levels. That was joyous, including an aunt who we share a love of the Beatles, and the Beatle program was on. I kind of wish I had waited just to enjoy the celebration. Later on, I figured out one of my cousins could have enjoyed it because she's a bubbling musician, and it tends to be a classic, almost a lesson, a master class in how to write songs. But needless to say, so I had a wonderful time, except towards the end. And this is something that I slipped into because I'm very energetic and I tend to engage strongly. I bring my guitar, I play music, I engage with each relative that I wanted to impart with. I had little things I wanted to express with all different ones of them on different levels. You know, one cousin I haven't really been too close to, and I missed her and our marriage. And it was a chance to engage a little bit with her husband, really for the first time, and also to express some issues because everyone has their trials and tribulations, so you can offer some compassion and love to them. And then they go around in each one, and I did. And some of the youngsters, and some of the younger cousins, and I adore them. They're so energetic. Some of them I'm teaching guitar and engaging, and it was nice to look at them and hug all of them for the first time, really. You know, I hadn't done that in, you know, when my cousin and her daughter came over, I was able to hug this daughter, who I hadn't seen in a while, which was wonderful. That sense of touch had been missing for so long, where we were literally, you know, standing, and literally some of the little ones would want to hug me, and I was putting my hand up, oh, no, just worried about corona, you know. Well, you have your mask and they're distancing 6 feet away. It's almost like pushing people away. So that was wonderful. So there was no real negative aspect of it. It was a joyous time. Particularly for some of my cousins who had wonderful things happen after going through some trials lately in terms of the people that were there and how everyone was in good spirits, good health, and looked like they were whole, and where they were able, others were able to engage with certain members of their family they hadn't engaged with, which I saw and witnessed, which was wonderful. So I was literally ecstatic and engaging and all over. Anyway, so, and we played some volleyball, which was a wonderful thing for me for one game. I just got bored with it, to be honest with you. But I did play, and I made one good shot. The rest of them, I probably was a stick. But it was wonderful for me because it was the last time I played volleyball with them. What's 2 years ago when I just got out of the hospital from heart surgery. Still in rehab, practically. And I go up to my man's place, and we were celebrating Christmas or Thanksgiving, and I'm over there playing, and I literally got up there to play, you know, right with a net between a couple of trees, and I'm over there, there's, you know, 10 people on each side, and I'm over there ready to do it. And as soon as I stood up, I got so nauseous and so dizzy, I had to run to the house. I sat down immediately. And you're talking about someone who, before my heart surgery, was playing basketball or tennis, really, for years. And part of tennis is looking up at the sky and serving balls. Here I was. I couldn't even forget about getting my hands up in the air. I couldn't even stand just standing there waiting for the ball. I literally, on my feet, was shaky. I literally had to sit down. So this time I get up there, and I started playing. I was fine. I was jumping. I was doing everything you would do. I made a shot. I was aware of where my teammates were. I was totally engaged. I felt no ill effects. So that was wondrous in terms of my recovery. So as I'm laying this out for you, I'm hoping that you have joyous times. But here's the caveat. Towards the end of the evening, things started to, in my perceptions, change. Now, I'm telling you, my family adore me. They would never do anything. But they were still engaging, even if they were tired, at levels that were the same. And I started to conscrew. Now, I was, by this time, out of it. And it's very difficult to get out of my aunt or my cousin's house, because of the area she lives in, the rural area. And I have to be let out. Believe me, it would be troublesome to get out of here. You might make a wrong turn and be stuck in the middle of the mountains all night. And they might not find you. So they drive me out, which is a bit of a curmudgeon. And I, in fairness to them, I need to probably warn them about this. Because probably much earlier, after 7, if I was home and I had this much activity, really going from 7 o'clock in the morning because I was doing things in my house to driving up there mid-morning, and then the whole engagement from 1 o'clock on till 12 hours of this, all positive. There was a day when I was first injured that these kind of family gatherings years ago, I was so exhausted I would be in bed for 3 days afterwards. I don't think it's that bad now, but it does catch up to you. Anyway, so what happens is by a certain point, I start to really drift off. And I wasn't quite aware. One cousin said they'd get me, my particular cousin, who usually doesn't, you know, has 4 kids. It's a big schlep for her to take them home. So maybe she couldn't do it. I didn't know who to wait for. And others were approaching me and telling me to go because they're waiting, and she invited me to stay at the house. I particularly didn't want to do it because I had an ongoing program fixing my refrigerator where a part was going to come the next day, and I wanted to fix it. I had to put a thermostat in. I had other things to do, and I didn't want to get stuck up there and maybe kill a day. And I was tired. And when I'm in that state, I have a tendency to misunderstand what people are saying. And I was really oblivious. One cousin approached me, would you go with me? I would have went with anybody. And it turns out someone who didn't relate it. And so I felt a bit put off by this. But I think that's a misrepresentation. I don't think anybody intentionally. As a matter of fact, at some point I'm going to talk to them because the evidence is, by my prior experience, it's really a dangerous time at these points for me. If I was at home, I would not involve myself in any critical decisions at this point. Probably before that. This is probably about 11 or 12 at night. Probably as early as 7 o'clock, I would shut it down from all decision-making activities of any kind. And I know I could manage driving because it's an easy drive. You just sit in your car, listen to it. It's about an hour and a half. It's such a straight shot. I know it by the like the back of my hand. But I knew it was a problem, and I felt almost offended by how they were because they were just acting like they would normally act. But it came off to me as very different because I'm not firing now on all cylinders. And I'm oblivious to it. I wasn't sure what I was doing when I was staring at making these decisions. And I probably should have shut it down. And the evidence of my malfunction is evident in the last times I have gone up there. And that was the last 2 years. And these are the evidence of how bad it is when I'm in these states after these activities. One time I went up there. to sing a song for one of my cousins. And this is something you all need to be aware of when you're celebrating these holiday series and you're gauging your capacity for higher function, that the total engagement with so much loving family members, sometime numbering 10 or 20, is so inundating on the focus that you're putting out. Easy to forget how fatigued you are. And all of a sudden, you begin to realize it. A yardstick for this is a doctor who did surgery on a tendon in my foot 3 or 4 years ago. I severed a tendon in my ankle playing tennis. And he told me how he understood my brain injury. And that is, he schedules all his surgeries. He's a podiatrist. He schedules all his surgeries on Friday. And I asked him why. And he told me, he says, because if I do it during the week, I couldn't handle and see patients. And then he told me the truth. This is a first-class, brilliant surgeon. He has his 8 hours of surgery, and he goes into, and he says on Saturday, his brain is so toasted from the focus of the surgery that he literally cannot program his microwave, and he can't do anything of any level, or including play golf, on a Saturday. What he can do is ride his bike and do mundane things. He says he has trouble programming a microwave he normally can do. That's how bad it is. And he's not functioning, and he can't even make a cup of coffee because his brain is so toast. Well, it's much more accelerated when you have a TBI. So as I'm planting this for you all, as you're planning your holidays, to be aware of this. Now, evidence for me is, as I analyzed how I was feeling this post-holiday, and I was going to do this program, I decided I needed to address this, not just for myself, but for the audience at large, because the evidence of my malfunctioning, I realized in my reactions and how I felt, things were starting to not correlate correctly from the fatigue, is that the two prior years, 2019 and 2020, this is the evidence. One year I went there to go up to the mountains, and I went there to play a song for a cousin whose horse died. And I worked real hard. I was just out of the hospital. It was in 2019. And I had this rough draft of a song I had written years, one of my first songs, about her horse. So I worked on the lyrics, redid them, and changed the melody, and created a song. Worked on it for a couple of days because the horse died. We were up there within like 3 or 4 days or 5 days that weekend. He died in the week, and 5 days later we're having this get-together at her house and her barn. So I decided I would go up there, and I was going to play her this song. I bought her some chocolates and stuff like that. And I was very taxed again. And again, I'm with family, and it's a big celebration. And then people still like that, just as because they're normal people, even late into the evening, they're still fully engaged. After playing the song and stuff, and I did a good job, I set it up in the barn, and it was where his stall would have been, and we set up, had it recorded, it's on tape. We did some nice little sound effects. I had them singing, playing a little bit of a percussion in the background by going like that. And it came off pretty good. I sung a few other songs and got rid of the songs. We made it, did it in one take, and the song came off pretty good. And so a job well done. It was for a very special cousin I love dearly. And the horse is so important to people, and I knew it was, and I just wanted to step up to the plate. Well, as I still was engaging with people, guess what I did when I drove home? It gives someone an indication of how I probably need to shut things down, and I need to let my family members know that after a certain amount of time, I'm not there for anything other than pleasurable conversation. Decisions have to be made in advance, and that's it. Because that time, I was so out of it, I drove my car into a ditch. The second time, I went up again, Okay, literally put my car into a ditch and destroyed it. And literally drove into a 14-foot ditch by a station. Now, you can say it's because it was dark and this and that. I think it's because I was starting to fatigue, and that's evidence of it. It's further evidence. The next time, I was up again. I think it might have been the same year afterwards. And I'm at my another house, and this time I have my newer car. And I'm driving, and I'm leaving again in a rush. And they're hectic, but they're, you know, got kids and schedules, so they're ready to beat it around. Me, probably way earlier in the evening, I am toast. So I'm missing things. I'm trying to get out. I rush, and guess what I do? I roll. I get so freaked out because I lost my cell phone, and I'm so discombobulated that I literally left the car in reverse or whatever it was, and the car rolled into my cousin's car. I literally created an accident by my malfunctions. It just shows the extent of how when you start like that doctor who could do great surgery and as I'm capable of great things, I'm so fried, I will mess up on the most basic things. So at this point, personally, and I would suggest you all do the same thing, in preparation for these holidays, you must discuss this with your family to prepare so you're not, because if I was at home and I was just wasted from activity, I would have been laying down and disengaging from activity. And literally stopped doing things for a period of time. And it's what I practice and do. I lay down often. I stop after I reach a certain point of creativity. Working 8 hours straight is difficult for me, so I do things sporadically in all my activities, my investments and everything else. And I do things instead of a straight 9-to-5 job. I do things in bits and pieces, because of my energy level, and I give myself a chance to rest. Well, unfortunately, with family gatherings, and with these things, since it's not work or a task, you tend to get more seduced into thinking, well, it's all okay, it's just pleasantry. Well, that in and of itself can burn you out. So I'm going to have to talk with them about that so that I can circumvent. We have a trip on Christmas. I'm going to have to circumvent that and do things in advance and not do things when it's time to leave, not engage in any serious activities, because at that point I'm really not there. And the evidence is in the two things I did after these long days. One, two car accidents at the short order, and I think it's correlated to how malfunctioning I get towards the end. And I should be leaving it off. I should be much more calmer. And people should be in, I need to get them to not, if they have things they want to engage with me, they need to do it early. And at that point, it must be much more, vanilla would be the word, and just easy and make decisions about leaving way in advance so you don't have to do it when you're fatigued, tired, not knowing what you're doing. And this is a very larger picture. In addition to it, in fairness to your relatives and yourself, when you reach a level like a lot of us do, and certainly I have, in TBI, we're very deceptive. We have people can almost expect you to be on all the time. Because while I've managed to perform tasks and things, I've done tremendous things with investments. I'm making tremendous amounts of money, which goes into another issue that I wanted to discuss, that as we develop things post-injury, success can often bring on bigger burdens than non-success. That when you attempt to function fully, often the very things you do, and I've seen it with other TBI survivors, can bring on responsibilities to the point where you almost find you're not retired, you're almost working as a full-time person already. And I've seen it with other survivors in two or three different ways I'll bring it up. So when you go through these things, the very success, my appearance, my engagement is good. I'm sharp. I'm very intelligent. I have keen aspects. I can do a radio program. I can play tennis. I can engage in subjects. I can engage with the youngsters. I can engage with the adults. I've proven myself to take care of myself financially beyond anyone's expectation, TBI or not. I play guitar. They know I just took up guitar about 5 years ago, and now I'm playing songs every time I see them, improving it better and better. And so when they see those things, it's very easy to assume he's pretty well. It's almost that, and I've seen it in other TBI people. But underneath that, even when we have that, we still have the down point. The fact that I can do all those things, I am still on a shorter clock than that doctor who has that reaction to the 8 hours of surgery, and literally his brain the next day is nowhere. Well, after a days of activity, I'll get there. So the key to don't do this as you plan your activities this year, and maybe you're bright, bushy-tailed, and willing to show your success, which is part of what you're doing, is that you need to clue your family in and be warned of the warning signs that you're still as vulnerable as you were even many years ago. Just like the doc has to make preparation, he couldn't see patients the next day, so he has to teach it when he has a day off, because he needs a day off after that. Well, we need our times off. So we have to set a coping strategy on how to deal with it so I don't get stressed out and do things like put cards in dishes. A way to let people know, not that they're doing anything wrong, because they're not, especially how we can sometimes show ourselves to be totally engaged. And it's not like we're doing anything, but just the amount of input will exhaust us, at least me. Some other brain injury people don't have the same issues, but certainly in my case, I do. And so that's the way to do it, so that you can enjoy the holiday and not be taxed out and not do things like put cars in ditches, which is not a good thing. Take my word for it. When it happened, because I was up in the darkest mountains of North Georgia, I thought I was heading off the end of a mountain. I didn't think there was going to be a bottom. I thought, this is it. But, excuse me. I apologize. I got to get some water. But this also leads into other areas. That's part of this, in a sense, that our very success as TBI survivors can lead into, like, the idea that we appear so functioning that people will perceive us as that. Well, the successes that you get, and I'll bring up my instances. I tend to not talk about it because I try to avoid talking about financial things, but it's okay. It's becoming part of my thing, and I did talk to finally a lot of my relatives to show them. Part of the reason why I actually did was not to so much partly out of a little pride, but more importantly, it's because as I talk to them, I realize I'm going to have a problem. And other TBI in other areas of success have had also problems because of how all of a sudden they start activities, and the activities of themselves bring on tremendous amounts of burden, unknown at the time, or they get very bigger in terms of responsibility, and I'll bring those things up and how you have to manage them. In my particular case, one of the goals I had when I was left a little money was to increase my my net worth. Okay, remember, I'm on disability. I could work. I was making $1,000 a month off Social Security, and that's about it. My mother left me some money. I made a good decision and bought a townhome. That was a business decision. Turned out well. And then I had some money to invest. So I worked on that because I couldn't work, really. And so I thought my goal was to increase my overall net worth so I would have more security. It's really quite simple. And I got very good at it. I decided to pick things that were low investment and high return. And I picked a lithium stock, and when it was dirt in the ground, thinking I'd double it, thinking I would then maybe make $250,000. Well, I did that, and about 2017. Then I saw that, oh, this could be bigger. So I kept making sure I held on to it. And at the time, I also bought some autographs. I was looking for some real estate deals, but I never found one that I thought was worthwhile for the investment. I thought, what am I doing all this just for making? If I just make this, I might not make it, and I might be stuck with a house, you know. It didn't seem like it was at a great return for $70,000, $80,000. You're going to buy a house, rehab it, make $15,000, all right. Doesn't sound like a lot. It sounds like a lot of work for that. And like I said, be warned, when you do activities and you're a TBI survivor and you're on disability because you can't really work, I certainly couldn't because I couldn't last 8 hours on any job. If I can't last 8 hours with my family and loving, I'm not going to work on a job. So, and if I get fatigue, I would certainly get it. I tried a job, but I did get fatigue. So I always have picked things in terms of my higher functioning. I took care of a man. I taught tennis for maybe 10 hours a month, spread around. And then when I had some money, my mother left me a little bit, not very much. I had money to invest, so I focused on sporadically, meaning I didn't always work like 8 hours, but I'd do a lot of research in bits and pieces so I could spread it out in terms of finding the right investments. And on other things, I purchased some autographs that are probably going to be worth some money, and I did research, months and months and months of research, but I did it in ways that I could control the amount of energy I put into, not like someone that works 9 to 5. So it was worked out. Well, as it increased, and now it reached fruition, is that, like all things, and other people who have TBIs who've had success, like the family gatherings where you now have to monitor a positive thing, not just a negative thing, right? Because all of a sudden the success of the family gathering, well, now I get stuck two axes. And I realize, whoa, wait a second. Even the positive things are going to exhaust me. I'm sure the surgeon worked very hard to become a surgeon and had that to do that surgery, but it still has a net effect, right? Same thing with the family gathering. Same things with successful activities, whatever they are. And I'll tell examples of others so you know I'm not doing. But on myself, this is my area. So once I made these decisions, and then I started to think about how I realized that I could make a lot more money, and I worked on it, and I did some moves so that I could keep extending most of my money, keep it in the stocks. And I made some strategic moves and selling and buying back and working. And so I put myself in a position I could wait for the biggest return. Well, it's now reached a fruition where I'm up so many dollars, over six figures, multiple six figures, close to million. And at this point, I may be in a position where I may be extremely wealthy within the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months or 2 years, sometime. And that automatically has got me triggered where I realize I've got now things I have to think about of the success. Now, a couple of things. I've got spiritual aspects to be concerned about. I've got personal issues as I'm trying to date through Corona, and now I'm looking at more avenues to do that. And I also have to deal with the fact that I'm going to now be in a position where I'm going to have lots of money and how I have to change how I go about living to enjoy it and change, like maybe I don't have to get the refrigerator, save $200 on a refrigerator job and put the part in myself. Well, I'll probably always do that. That's just program me. But, and then spiritually, because success like this, I've discovered, it's why I'm letting people know my family, is, and it puts some people off because they don't know how to do it. And I've got to figure out how I'm going to manage that success. It's not just like stick it in the bank and forget about it. You have to figure out strategically where to do. For instance, if it's really a lot of money, I'm not too particularly sure what I do with it. I'm already thinking about it. You just can't stick it in a checking account or a savings account. You've got to plan it like you do things. See how success can bring problems. And then, of course, I've also looked at the temptation of the intoxication of it for my particular case. As I look at the increase every day, I realize the seduction of it happening. It really is. It's almost like a drug that I have to avoid. I pray to God a lot. I humble myself. But it still is intoxicating. Now, you have to give yourself credit because I did figure out how to do it. I'm still not sure. I still think God had a big hand in it because I still can't figure out how I picked the needle out of a haystack. But I did do it. I actually did the research to do it. But that intoxication I have to warn about. But you also have all the planning you have to make, which is a job in and of itself. Where, like you're asking people advice. Well, when you're not, people don't have that kind of money. Guess what? They don't know what you do with it. You've got to find out. Now I have to research and plan what I do with it when it happens. You know, I've got some vague, and it's a life-changing. I'm going to probably buy a house and sell my house. That in and of itself is a major occurrence. And I'm searching for, I'm dating. That in itself is a charm. What do you tell someone, right? You know, if you tell the truth, well, I'm going to have X, Y, Z, and this is a true fact. It could be a huge amount. And so, and I want to do it responsibly and stuff like that and all that good stuff. But it creates all these other things. And and it takes effort to do those things, to set them up. It takes effort to go find a house, even if you have the money for it. You know, you got to go buy, you got to move, you got to get rid of this one. You know, I'm trying to strategically place things. So you create whole avenues that you never anticipated. You just thought, well, I'll make some money, everything will be wonderful. Well, it's not that easy. And stuff like that. The spiritual aspect, because of the, and I finally figured out an idea through another relative. I dug in the summer. She had some issue, and I ended up finding this particular and ministry, and it led me to find a certain amount of anyway, they do support groups of various kinds. Anyway, I'm not specific on that, but I found this, and it's connected to a church I know. I knew it from a real estate agent like 10 years ago. I heard of it. It's right in Kent, and there's one right up in the area I'm looking to move to, and I checked this church out. And what am I thinking? Well, I'm thinking I really need to attend a church. And I looked at, I listened to the sermon by the guy, and it's called the Revolution Church. I guess it's okay to say it. And I really liked him. And he was very laid back. It's kind of my style. And they run this ministry that a relative is now part of in some of their online groups. And I'm doing it for two reasons. One is it'll be a good check as I look for someone that I want to share my life with. I really do, because I want to enjoy the success I've had, and I want to spend it with someone, a woman I like. And so for guidance in that area, but also because now I have a problem. It sounds like it's not a problem, but it in a sense is, it's not a problem, but I told you, I alluded to the fact that I can feel off the computer screen the intoxication of the success. When you see that kind of money coming over your net worth every day, it is heady. It is like the kid that just got his first bike, or I literally thought I just won the lottery. That's how heady it is. And it's ironic, I told you that over the Thanksgiving, the Beatles just came out with a three-part series, which is very good. I plug it for anyone that does anything musically to watch it, because it's a masterclass. But there's something even more important. One of the reasons why I like them so much It's because all of a sudden, since I've had this late in life success with this, I know how they felt when they reached their peak of success. And the fact that all of them, to large extents, were able to remain humble enough that the success and the money and the fame didn't do it. Now, I'm not famous like them, but I have changed my lot in terms of economically. And so I realized as I was looking at the screen that my spiritual, I need to do it. So my answer to it is I'm probably going to go to this church. I've been researching it over the last few weeks. It's down the block once the football season ends. And I know, sorry, dear Lord, I don't want to miss my playoffs. But I'm going to start attending some of the church. They have groups and stuff for various things. And the reason is because that is there's a big danger. And so having money that I've never really experienced on the level that I will needs to be tempered because nobody knows how do you deal with that. And so, and I don't want to be seduced and use the Beatles as a yardstick for it because they handled it so well. There are other people who have reached fortune who have been destroyed by it because of their choices, because now I naturally am not overly materialistic, so I don't overly because I don't have the urge to go out and buy other than travel and stuff. And a strategic move for a more comfortable house with a little more amenities, that's a good financial move. That's not ostentation. I don't have the urge to buy fancy cars, nor do I want the kind of woman that just wants to show off, you know, diamond rings. It's just not my thing. But I'm going to check myself to make sure of that by maybe attending a church because I sense a vulnerability in that area. That I'm going to have it. And it guided me to make sure that I do the right things. I may also find people there that can advise me on areas where I can put it. And so and this is how post-TBI success can become a problem. Because I really want to devote myself to other things other than doing these things. This is where even something as successful as garnering money creates avenues that I don't really intend to never to want to do. I never particularly thought of wanting to figure out cash shelters, tax shelters, investment property, land development. I'm even thinking of putting solar property on certain commercial things. And so, you know, I'm hoping to do it very quickly so I can devote myself to some more high-functioning and maybe open up a nonprofit is if I have enough to, after I take care of some people that I love dearly. But once you do that, it creates all these things where this is the danger. Not only is if you even if you deal with temptation, you don't want to get caught in a path where you don't want to be doing. And I'll do it. And hopefully do it expeditedly, but I didn't want to look for, you know, shelters and stuff. But that's apparently kind of where I'm heading because that's potentially what I'm going to have to do, both for the protection of the asset to make sure you maintain it so that you make the money work for you and stuff like that. And because I want to do other things. And me, since I set myself up like that, it would be something of a nonprofit time where you leave a nice piece. You do something for someone other than yourself, which is part of the spiritual health. And it happens with other people. This is just my way because I really had a focus on finances. It's not evil. I wanted to. I don't apologize. I was a salesman my whole life. Making money was part of what I wanted to eventually do anyway. I just happened to do it in a different way than I ever foresaw in my sales career. And so, but you have to temper that. You have to temper the temptation. You have to temper how you go about it and what kind of people. So my goal is to solve that, is to, I'm probably going to attend this church. I've already been checking it out. I've listened to the preacher's sermon, and it was very reflective on some of the things I was analyzing in myself. And I thought, wow, that would be a great reminder to make sure to stay on a correct path so I don't get tempted because once it's all right now, but once it gets into such large amounts that it becomes
you have to look. It's why I use the Beatles as a yardstick, because very shortly from being very broke as I was, they became so rich it's inconceivable. Their biggest goal when they were starting out was to get a house, a car, and a guitar. That was it. Within short order, they found that they not only had millions, but billions of dollars, unlimited amounts of money, unlimited amounts of fame and fortune instantly. And it's a case study in watching this, not just from the classical music or learning how to create songs in the studio, but also looking at their personalities, how in the end they were still just regular guys, how they kept it. I believe it's probably because of they had four of them. If you look at other superstars who were seduced, like I could be, by the fame and fortune, like Elvis and Michael Jackson, who destroyed themselves, and there are others, easily. And in the Beatles' case, they had it 10 times greater than those kind of people. And if you look at it, it's probably, if you see the movie, you can use it as a case study. Not only for music stuff, which is good for TBI, matter of fact, I'm going to do a program on it, but you can also use it for a study on how four members of a team managed to succeed beyond their expectations of all the riches, all the fame, all the adulation in the world, but because they were a team and kept themselves so humble by their interaction, they never got over their skis. And everything was taken tongue-in-cheek, and you can see it in their interactions with each other. It's actually a lesson on how you do it, where you look at others who didn't have a team with them, like a Michael Jackson, as equals, bring them off their pedestal. They began to believe, both Michael Jackson and Elvis, they said exactly the same thing. They said to, when people said, you can't do that, you know. And you know what they would tell people? They said, no, I can do it because I'm Elvis. Essentially what they did is they put themselves on the level of God. How did they do that? Because they took drugs that were so experimental that nobody in their right mind, an average person, would get away with it and destroy themselves. And you know how they got away? Because they were super famous and popular, and they could get people to say yes to them, doctors and everything else. And when people confronted about what they're doing, and they really both said the same thing, both of them, when they were confronted that they were harming themselves, I'm different. When you say that, you're saying you're above man and you're on the level of God. That's a dangerous thing. Whereas else, someone like the Beatles, because they had four of them, you can tell in their interaction, the minute one of them gets on over their skis or a little too high for the hog, the others are going to shoot them down very quickly. And you can see it in their interaction, laughing at each other. Oh, really? Oh, you really? Oh, when one of them sort of like strutted for the camera, they goofed on him. Oh, you're doing that poorly. You're over there strutting yourself for the, and they teased him. Well, that has a tapering effect. It's why I'm considering why I've been free with certain people that I know I can talk to it personally. Some get blurry-eyed, but others I can tell, because the actual success can cause that tempering. And that temptation will get there, will get further. That's why I'm thinking of joining a church in my case, and why it tempers yourself in terms of interpersonal relationships, you want to say. And then, of course, dealing with the complications of the success, so I manage it correctly, because I don't want to end up being just, to me, I'm making the money so I don't have to. And I want to do it in such a way, but you do have to manage it, and it creates a new job for me that I didn't anticipate. And this goes into areas which all of you can share in terms of your activities post-injury in the success of it as a celebration. I'm going to bring up two examples other than me in my success and having to deal with the ramifications of that. And sometimes you can be overwhelmed by it, like being overwhelmed, in a sense, by a successful holiday with my family by not taking into account the TBI-related injuries of him. And that is like, I had one friend that developed a support group. And he was a former salesman, and he liked to manage sales managers. So this was part of his skills. Like I use my former skills to do what I did, and he developed group. And this happened to him like 15 years ago. It was like 3 or 4 years post, and he was into helping people. Like you would go instead of managing a sales group, he's essentially managing loads of TBI survivors. Well, it got to a point where over years, he became a chauffeur. He probably burnt down 2 cars, ran up a ton of gas bills for him and his wife. They had a family. Because he became a full-time chauffeur. He was chauffeuring people all over the city all the time. There was times after 3 or 4 years, he would scream. He had this whole group. He was chauffeuring people all over the place with all sorts of these TBI-related, stroke, and some people in wheelchair conditions. Where he was like the chauffeur for all over the place. And he thought about, well, I can ask for a few bucks. He never really got anything. And in a sense, it was his own success that caused this burden on him. Where all of a sudden he's driving people all over. He did it for years. And it ended up that he created a support group and stuff like that. Now he's probably got it pretty managed, probably because his wife took away the credit card for all the gas bills. But it became overwhelming after a period of time, and it was the creation of his own success and his own good heart. And then there was this other woman. And at one time, they had this program called the Peer Visitor Program at local Georgia. And she had experience in sales, so, you know, worked for some big corporation, corporate sales. So she was good at sales. Well, she took her experience and all of a sudden created this, had this peer visit, and she volunteered. Like I said, you get sucked into these things. It's, you know, the seduction of it is subtle, and we forget. This is what happens with us. Like I forget that even if it's positive, I'll get taxed just as well, and I have to be forewarned. It's no different than being in my house and having to lay down from a very strenuous activity. Or how a success of something brings out an unwanted or sometimes even wanted burden you haven't foreseen. It grows under itself. Anyway, this woman has something called a peer visit program where they visit people in the hospital. And, and give them a packet. And a packet of materials to help them when they first get a TBI. And they had peer visitors going to bring the packets to the people. Well, this woman created this, and it kept growing and growing and growing from the entire city to different, all over the state, to many states, to the point where at some point she had a pullback. Because she created something that became almost like a monster. What do? And you do that, and you do that, and it becomes like it becomes overwhelmingly. And what happens is we don't know as we're doing this that we're doing it. We get fooled into thinking, oh, it's all wonderful. Same thing with me as I was making that. You know, you don't foresee it, and you don't foresee the mental anguish. And all of a sudden, from someone who is told very realistically by doctors and health professionals, you can't work, you find yourself, you're actually performing full-time work, either chauffeuring or, in my case, having to do focus things on investments. It complicates it. Or in this woman's case, having to do the peer visitor. So I'm telling you all this because our very success in the coping strategies have to be forever counterbalanced.
So as you head into the holidays and you have your own areas of success, I still say you should do those things and tune those skills. But you must be forewarned that you still have limitations. You have to plan like that doctor does, of being able to have different areas of rest period. And that includes as we head into the holidays, and you've probably got plans with your loved ones, but you're going to have to tell them. And in my case, I figured out the gauge of what hours I would be toast at pretty much by dinner time. So I'll plan whatever my exit's going to be way in advance. And I'll let them know that at some point they're going to have to tune down to conversation to very milk toast. I don't want to make decisions after a certain point. I'll do it beforehand, plan it out, like the doctor does, do the thinking beforehand, so that day is just down to some mundane kind of activities. And I'll plan that there'll be a cutoff point where I don't engage, or the engagement is just pleasantry and stuff, and plan any organizational leaving and stuff way ahead in advance, pack the bag, have it all ready to go 5 hours ahead of time, so I don't have to go and leave it in stress and have it at the last minute when I'm not functioning well. And it gets to be dangerous, or I'm distracted in driving. You have to do that. Remember, even the most pleasant activity will get you fatigued. You know, you could, like the doctor, you know, he trains, he wants to be a surgeon, but he can't do it all the time. Pilots are on all sorts of organized rest periods. They can't fly consecutively. They have to take off. They have to stay in cities and hotel rooms. They have to get some sleep. There's been issues in plane crashes because they took too much time, and or they didn't take the time to rest and stuff, and it's now illegal. They have to do it. Because if they don't, they won't function as a pilot goal. And these are healthy people that aren't TBI. So us as TBI survivors or brain injury survivors have to stress this much more than the average person. Because, and in the case of your family, you have an advantage. Telling them in a calm way that, first of all, there's nothing they're doing as wrong as there isn't. But letting them know that this is the way it's going to go. And the evidence in my case is two things. You would have evidence in your case. Look, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to limit myself so that you don't get stuck into a situation where something happens or you're not perceiving and you shut it down. What you're doing is, like the doctor, you're organizing your pleasure time in a way that's works for you. You're creating a coping strategy to function within those things. I have to transfer that into other areas. And then, of course, it goes into how success and achievement, like those other people's, eventually you do it. Now, the danger when you don't plan the acceleration of activity, whatever it is that you'll crash and burn. In my case, I got into two wrecks. So I think God is telling me, and I think my body is telling me, you need to plan the activities because it can get a little hectic. So I'm further going to plan it, and I'll lay out a little presentation to my family so that they know. They're very easygoing, and they'll understand it. Remember, you as well, like me, because we manage to engage and be successful in so many areas of our lives, like these other people I mentioned, people think you can handle it because the appearance, that's the deception of it. The appearance is you got it all together. As a matter of fact, you've exceeded even what their expectation would be for themselves. But it's still underlining your functioning. Remember, most of your success has been built up under a planned coping strategy. We just have to have that coping strategies for the actual success. And people, at least you're close to, will understand it. In some cases, the best talk I had was with that doctor. It crystallized it for me.
that he understood when I told him about my TBI. He understood that it was something that had to be you know, adjusted. It was something that had to be arranged, and so that he could rest the following day, and you keep it down. So what I'll do is, when I'm with my family, I'll let them know the periods I'm going to be able to do things and how long, and then just cut it off. And as for my success, like I said, I'm going to join the church, and just as a meter on my thing, because I want to make sure I keep that down and have a reminder, like that preacher said, of that. Like the Beatles had a reminder for themselves, because without it, you could be seduced by success, like Elvis or Michael Jackson. Anyway, but we'll get into something where we're just going to celebrate the holidays, but in a minute, right now, I want to give you a little update. It's update time. Couple of issues. Well, it looks like we're nearing at least the, I wouldn't say the end of Corona, but at least the management of Corona. First of all, it doesn't look like the hospitals are as bad as last year. Second of all, I don't see that people that get vaccinated are ending up in hospitals. That's another thing I want to put out of way. I haven't seen people getting sick from the vaccine. They might get the illness, but not as bad. The vaccine itself isn't giving anybody the corona. And they have the variants. This week they announced that we know the Pfizer. I already got the booster or the third shot of the Pfizer. That was what I did. And they found out that because we know the efficacy of the Pfizer drops after 8 months or whatever. Yeah, 8 months, 5 months or whatever, 6 months. And they discovered that the amounts were lower that the booster helped. Well, they've discovered that may be enough for the new variant. I forgot the name of it, the one that came out of South Africa. And that's it. They're also working on, and some of the other vaccines are coming up with, they're going to have a pill that you can take if you do catch the COVID, and you catch it within 5 days. That'll be out next year. There's other ones they're coming up with to attack that specifically. They also think now the third shot will help you against the variant, the Pfizer one. And there also the possibility that we may have another booster next year, meaning a fourth shot. So even though it doesn't look like it's totally ending, it looks like it's getting more and more manageable. And now they also just released that statistically, if you had the two shots and you had COVID and you get the booster, you're very well protected. And so that's a combination of people who have it and have it. Also, the people that are getting it, the hospital rates are much, much lower, which means people are now surviving it much better when they get the vaccine. So that shows another pathway towards pretty much controlling it, where eventually it may be like another flu. This is a great possibility. Look at the evidence now. And these are the drugs we know of. They'll come up with more. They'll probably come up with, at some point, a drug you can take which will eliminate you, the pill. They keep winning, and I'm sure they're making a fortune off it. So these are things. Also, children can now get it. So I'm not going to tell those of you that have children to get the vaccine. But it would be a good idea to think about it
it would be a good idea to consider it, but talk to your doctor, especially with your children. I'm not going to tell anybody they should or shouldn't do it with children involved, but it's something to think about. I believe the percentage of people that are getting cured from this is going up and up. And we got some new things to deal with in terms of new medications. And I would suggest those of you who've got the boosters to continue to get the boosters and protect yourself. And I think as time goes on and more people get the vaccine, I think it'll become less and less of a problem, and maybe minor, because if enough people are vaccinated and the sickness goes down, and I think it may end up being, instead of eliminating it, it turns into a standard, flu or virus, a typical year-end virus and stuff like that. And I'm going to close with, I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Now that I gave you my clinical aspects on how to enjoy the holidays, I suggest you go out there and just try to find all the love you can and make sure that you take care to enjoy the holidays. Isn't it nice that we're going to be able to celebrate? Who cares if everything's stuck in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and we have a shortage of lights and gifts? Hey, look, take it out of the materialistic and just enjoy the joy. Go get everyone else a book. There's no shortage of books. Get them books. I see stacks of them in the store. And if you have to cut down on the Christmas lights, make it a reduced lighted Christmas. If you have to, you just put up an avocado as your Christmas tree and just have the joy of it. Think how funny it would be if you dress up the avocado and all the Christmas decorations. And remember that I'm going to give out some things next year. I've got some plans for programs. One thing I wanted to do, since I play and sing songs and since music has become a part of my life, and it's very good for brain injury and exercising the brain, because more brain activity is stimulated through listening to music, but playing music was good. And I just I've been working with this guitar teacher who's showing me a little bit more about the guitar. I'm working with him to improve my playing. And he at one time was a teacher for disabled people, so some of them with brain injury. So he's very calming, very nice man. So I'm going to work it. So I'm going to do a broadcast with him as one of my guests next year. I'm also going to have a return guest of someone with an autistic child. I may also have my cousin who is a social worker. I want to have her on again to begin the year in those orders. So we're going to get back into the normal, solutions today, meaning finding solutions to those TBI people and others. And those two will be good. We want an update on the autistic child. And then we want to do the music, which will show the way I'm going to try to put the broadcast together is to interview him about himself. And he'll be available for lessons of stuff. Either online or I don't know if he do online, but he does in person. But also because we could work with and set up maybe a small little program where people can learn how to do some basic music things as a exercise for a TBI person in terms of being able to function with it. And being able to get it in terms of that, it's going to be one of my plans. Another update. So those are the beginning of the programs we're going to have after the first. And the other update is as part of the package for Social Security. You're going to get a big bonus for those of you that are on Social Security, which is a big part of the brain injury world. You'll get a bunch of money. I think it's like 3 or 4%.
It'll turn out to be $50 or $60 if you're just getting basic mouth. Some will be 100. It's a huge percentage increase. As part of the bill that Biden passed, or the administration, Biden administration passed, for people that do have hearing problems, hearing aids are now going to be part of the bill for Medicare, so that you'll be able to get a hearing aid paid for by Medicare once the bill is passed and he signs it, so sometimes next year. So if I don't remind you, make sure you keep abreast, call your congressman, pay attention to the economic bill. Once it's signed, they'll probably have a period of time before it goes into effect, but I'm sure it'll be next year and stuff like that. As far as economically, because of the looking like the corona variants are not becoming the issues that it was last year with the original COVID-19, economic activity is really good. I will forewarn people that are in the job market that these jobs will not, in this level, will not last forever. Business will adapt to this and automate from this and change from this. So it's a good time, since they're short of worker, to lay down your career path. Find something where you can really make money beyond this era. So it's a good way, entry-level way, to build a career, because eventually these entry-level jobs, where Amazon is offering all these goodies for you to be a part, may not be there moving forward. Believe me, Amazon will figure out how to automate those jobs. The era of office buildings, I think, is going to be drifting. And certainly, I've invested in a lithium stock. I certainly think we're going to have a revolution in terms of EV market. And so I think we're going to have very good economic activity. But I will stress, as I've done myself, finding independence is knowing the markets, knowing what the economics are going to be in the future, and managing things for yourself. You all of us have to depend on ourselves. As if you can use resources, social programs are there to some extent. But if you don't take the bull by the horns and figure out how to create your own self-sufficiency within the system we're in, you'll be behind the eight ball. And so take care of that. Anyway, I want you all to enjoy your holiday. Have a happy new year. It's going to be a new year. Think about it. COVID is going to be over. We'll be able to start to function and do things like we always did. And we're going to have a lot of interesting things on, a lot of people that are going to rise to the occasion. And with the God's help and a little bit of faith, there's not a problem that a man can't survive, a man can't do. And it's only a matter of time before we do it. It's not a question of if, but when. And we're going to have a complete revolution in terms of economics as all this technology kicks in. Some of the things you may look for, it's like my New Year's pitch, because we're heading into New Year's. Some of the things you may look for is very soon, for instance, your TV. Take all your electronics and toss them out. Tell the kids this, you know, the Facebook, or whatever, Meta they call it now, it's antiquated. With the technologies now, you'll be able to put something in your ear and be able to talk to people. You'll be texting. That'll go the way of the dinosaur. That'll look like Walkmans from the 80s. The TVs, I'd held off because the next generation is going to be holographic images. You know, pretty soon we'll be watching the NFL on our coffee tables and watching the players run around. And I'd be interesting to scare the wife a little. I'm just kidding. Just got to have a joke. And some other things, certainly in terms of transportation, the electric car revolution is, we're on the precipice of it. I've invested in it. I'm going to make a fortune on it. And it's going to be the wave of the future. It's going to revolutionize how we function. Cars are going to be autonomous to a large extent very shortly. some of the social systems of the way we live are going to change since office space. More and more people are just going to be working autonomously from their house. When you consider we'll be electrified, they might even have, at some point, you might even have, you might even have a situation where you don't have any more need to go to an office. And people will be able to function with solar power in the house, and they will be self-sufficient. They won't have to go anywhere. And they will have to figure out a new way to take that. And so you have to sometimes look for the future for these things. And what else? I'm also thinking of when you work from home, schools will be, unfortunately, through the computer screen or whatever screen, probably a holographic image. They might have the teacher as a holographic image in your house. And companies are going to do this because why have a whole office building? I've spoken to some people with companies, and they have gone on and on and on and said, "Yeah, it's not the way things used to be." You'll have much more of a because of that, I'm rambling a little, I apologize. Because of that, I think you're going to have people living in more small towns because people live in cities for economic reasons. And if the schools cut money and companies cut money, I don't think people will want to live in big cities. It's trafficy, it's high tax rate. People like living in small towns, so it's almost like we're going to go back to the way the country was in the 1800s. Most people lived in small towns, and they have more control over their local government. They can live autonomously. They're safer, and they only mess with who they want to mess with. And if their work and job is out of their house and their electric supply is independent, goodness, if your water supply is independent, you won't need to deal with anybody, especially who wants to deal with a power company or a water company. And now even your television signals will be by cable or stuff, or phone signal, it'd be you hook up to a satellite dish from your house. So we're going to be very autonomous. And as we go into those things, it's going to change it. So when you plan your future, there will be things you like about the changes and things you won't like. You do have to tolerate the things you don't like, and you do have to learn to control your love of the things you do like, so to speak. And you keep going and going and going, and stuff like that. And so that's what the future holds, and I would suggest all of you take hold of that. And remember, as you go through your doctors with your brain injury and your life, taking control of your own life, independent of government, independent of doctors, they can help you. And there are programs that can help you, but you have to take control of yourself. And the way you do that is educate yourself on what's out there. And I bring up some of these navigational things because they're going to have an effect on what you do and how you do it. And or what you do. And I think you need to take the bull by the horns. The easiest thing is to create your own, as a lot of people will do moving down the road, both with your brain injury and your regular life. Because who's better than control your life but you? Certainly not anybody else. And there is a call here. Let me see. Somebody's called in. Let me see. It's a strange number, so they may not want to be in there, but that would be okay. Hello?
Hello. I just wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas and tell you that it's been a real gift to have you as a host on the platform this year. This is Kim, and
I
didn't want the holidays to go by without saying Merry Christmas to you.
I was going to call you yesterday. I think I called you once because I was going to ask you how you were doing. Thank you. I'm glad I took the call. Did you like the program a little bit? Did you listen to part of it at least?
I did listen to part of it, but not from the beginning. I'm sorry, I was...
Okay.
With this broken foot I've had, I haven't been able to go down to the basement, and I made it down to the basement, and my mom had given me a... when they moved a couple months ago, a bin of old photographs, and I was looking through these old photographs, and there was Christmases past and stuff in there that go way back, and I kind of got lost in time, and then I looked at my phone and saw the time, and I was like, yikes, and hobbled up the stairs and wanted to call in, and not that I couldn't call you separately, but you're on air, so... I just wanted people to know that we've been really happy to have you here this
year.
Yeah,
hey, and the last broadcast, I'm just going to tell you. By the way, audience, this is one of the, she's program manager. But the one of the things I've done over the last four ones, I've done it just myself and created the whole programs where I'm just talking. A lot like Joey up in New York, giggles, mm-hmm. right? Only in my own style.
Yep.
I'm not, yeah. But I've now just uncut the umbilical cord and now can create, I'm just talking to the audience myself, and I have some calls in here. And I it's the 111. It came in as 111. That's why I answered it. I didn't know what it was. And so
sorry. That's Skype. I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
Okay.
I didn't have much juice in my phone, so I grabbed my computer and Skype. That's the way Skype comes in. I was thinking my number was on there. You didn't even know who it was when I called.
No, never mind. But you know, why not? You would have did the same thing. I saw, why not? You know, who knows? It might have been some foreign country. I don't know. Anyway. So, and I called you. I was interested in asking how you were. I was very concerned. I think I tried to call you a couple of times, off hours, which was like a surprise. I mean, I think maybe you didn't get back to me or something, but until now, which is fine. But because I was going to ask you just simply how you were, it wasn't related. But the last three or four, I've done all by myself, which was scary at first. Now I'm so used to it. I sit there and I've been talking for an hour and a half, and I basically formulated the whole program. I think it was a decent program. It was also helpful. I was using my own experience about the holidays mm-hmm. that I discovered. Also success, which is probably something you have found. And I've been trying to share this with my audience. This is actually where I could draw you in, actually, to the success. It's sort of like you being the program manager for this. Well, you started out as, okay, that sounds okay, I'll do a radio. But I guarantee you the responsibilities you've grown far beyond what you thought originally. And it's sort of like, right. All of a sudden, for people who aren't supposed to work, you do these volunteer activities and all this stuff, and all of a sudden you realize, this is real work stuff. This is no different than having a job. And so you get
one
into that.
I, you don't get paid.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
one small difference there.
Yes. And I just had, and one of the other things, since it was a Christmas program, and I wanted to make it a little clinical and therapeutic, I used my own experience at holidays, where I've discovered how I get, I'm sure you practice where you have to rest sometimes, and from activities, well, guess what happens when you do, sometimes what happens, I'm sure it happens with the radio program or other activities, especially you've got a mother, sometimes you get suckered in where you can't get away from your activity, and you push it way beyond where you're supposed to be. It happened to me Thanksgiving. All of a sudden, and this is positive activity. There was nothing but love there, Kim. And by 11 o'clock at night, I am toast. Toast.
Yep.
All of a sudden, the glib Bill, who could do all sorts of creative things, run a, do this broadcast, And the best analogy I had is when I had surgery on my leg, ankle, about 4 years ago from tennis. And I go see a podiatrist who did the surgery. And I talked to him about my brain injury. And I told him the effects of it. You know what he said to me? Gave me the best capsulation. Mm-hmm. A brilliant surgeon. Very successful podiatrist. And he says, oh. He says, I do all my surgeries on Friday. I said, why is that? He says, because if I do it any time other, I couldn't do my patients the next day. I couldn't perform it. He says, when I go home after surgery, the next day on Saturday, I can't program my microwave. I have trouble dialing the cell phone. I can't play golf. I literally have to keep activities down to nothing, and I make no major decisions because my brain is fried. He says, the only problem with you is it happens with just a half hour of activity. Him is 8 hours of surgery, and the next day, he's wasted. Of course, my family activity used to make it to the point where I can't recover, so I was trying to relate to the audience and saying that. And so I was using this ways for them, because what happened, the evidence how this has happened to me with my relatives is they still are at the same level of activity at 11 o'clock at night when I should have shut down major activity about 7 o'clock. And what happened is the last two, guess what happened the last two? I did this in 19 and 20. I had a car accident as I left the place. One time I put the car in a ditch, nearly killed. No, it's you. Yes. In 2019, I literally put the car in a ditch by a Chevron station, drove it into a ditch up in the mountains. I don't think I would have did that if I was not so fatigued. And the next time, I was so messed up in leaving, losing my cell phone and be so scrambled. I was scrambling around so with a chicken without a head. I got out of my car and left it in drive, and it rolled into my cousin's car. I left it in reverse.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I think that's an indication of a little fried mentally. So my solution for myself and my audience is if you have people that you care about, you can, and you've done it a little bit when you said, I got to cut this off, is I got to tell them in advance that, look, if we're going to decide how I'm going to leave and stuff, we're going to make these decisions beforehand. Don't throw anything heavy in. Just like the way the doctor does. He tells his wife, don't plan on anything for me. No major decisions, nothing. He just says, I don't decide nothing. I'm not doing anything. What am I going to do? I'm going to lay by the, I'm going to ride my bike, simple activity, ride the bike for a little bit, come home, hit the pool if it's summertime. Have a cocktail or two, relax, and do nothing. Nothing strenuous mentally at all. Literally to the point. He's a surgeon. He can't, and normally he can program his microwave, I'm sure. He says, I can't. Yeah, that's how bad it gets. So, and I also pointed out, since it related to that, you could address this to the audience and me, is the, and it's happened, I'm tempering myself, success, including you, say, with the program, success has in and of itself brings on unexpected challenges and things you have to do that you didn't anticipate. And that
absolutely.
And I've seen this with other TBI survivors. For instance, you know, you could get involved in a volunteer exam and all of a sudden it becomes all engrossing, and you're in it. You ain't going to get out. One guy used to help people with transportation, give this one a lift, and all of a sudden he became a full-time Uber driver. One lady started a peer visitor. Yeah, he did, to the point where he's burning cars out. And you, I'm sure, have done numerous activities, and all of a sudden find yourself you knee deep, and that's it. You know what I mean? And you become attached to it. You don't want to give it up. And it might be beyond in some ways, so you might have to reevaluate it and not eliminate it, but structure it so it's within your confines of your coping strategies for your own injury, for yourself, for your preservation. And another lady started a peer visitor program and ended up growing so much, she had to, you know, start to give it away because it got too much. so success. In my case, I'm becoming so financially independent. By the way, it's going to have a lot to do with what I'm going to do in terms of the radio program next year. I've got to talk about this year. I have plans to do some really creative things next year. And I'm looking for, since I'm building up a number of quality programs where I can expand it onto over-the-air radio stations. We'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of my finance, I have to change. The success of me, my stock has gone up so much and will go up so much further. I even told this to the audience. It brings on a whole list of problems I didn't anticipate. I'm already making plans for it, Kim. I'm going to have to buy a house, sell this house, just as a strategic move. I'm going to have to figure out, you know, what are the problems is. You want to hear what's the problem? What do I do with it when I have it? No, seriously, what do I do with it? I have to plan for that. Just today, I finished up my will, which is temporary. I'm eventually going to change that. The will is just temporary because I'm going to set up a living trust. But it's you have to. You think it's just simple, but you just can't stick it in your checking account. Leave it there. You have to do something with it. And for one thing, banks only have 200. You know, you're only covered by FDIC for $250,000. You know that. And so I'm actually. It sounds like I'm crying, but no. It actually brings up that all of a sudden I realize, well, when I have this, I'm going to have to do all these things, and even like people that have other forms of success post injury, and unfortunately, because we're TBI survivors, we have to manage those things. I mean, the fact that I'm going to have to looking places to put cash. Now I've got to search for them, right? So you've got to check out where you put them, what kind of whatever, mutual funds, this one. You know, you've got to, you know, what kind of property do I buy? You know, all these things. Does that sound like I'm complaining?
Well, it's a high rent problem to have, that's for sure.
Well, I don't sound like I'm bragging, do I?
No, it's just not, obviously not everybody has that problem, but you're right, any kind of new thing or stressor, whatever the success might be at whatever level, means that you have to think and work your way through it. You don't want to lose it. So, mutual funds.
Yeah,
I don't know about real estate right now, only because the market is so inflated right now. I could only think that it would go down. You know, you buy a house right now and they're, you know, people are going in and buying homes for three times their appraised value and not getting an inspection, cash and carry, if people can afford to do it. I mean, that the housing market right now is just crazy. There's so little supply to meet the demand that the prices are insane. So my personal opinion is that isn't a real good investment right now because it's
going to come down.
No.
In my case, it'll be a good move because getting rid of my townhome and finding a house, and they're quite reasonable, which is what I'm probably going to do. We're talking about during the course of this year. Maybe next year. Could be a couple of years, 2023. But
only a few weeks left in this year.
Yeah, exactly. But and I don't want to sound like someone that has a lot of success and I'm like a rich guy crying. But it's an unexpected thing. I also have to temper it. I said this to the audience, too. I'll say it to you, too. It's extremely intoxicating. I'm literally going to join a church because of it. Because I am telling you, there is a seduction of unbelievable, it's almost like a drug when you look at the computer screen and see these astronomical numbers increase. And so I'm tempering. I'm not a materialistic person, so I'm fortunate. I don't find value. I'm not going to buy fancy cars and all this.
And so what I have to do is temper that so that I don't, because it could be seducing to have that. So I want to keep it. Yes, yes, there's a danger of it. So so to keep myself in check, I'm probably going to join. I found this church, and I'm probably going to start attending it. And one of the reasons why I'm going to tell them as well, because I'm coming at the money, and I don't want to become seduced by it. You got to be careful. Anyway, but the problem is that because you're it's a combination of you think you're, you know, you start to think you're too smart. You know, you got to be careful. But it does come out to, because the reason I would manage it is not because of that, is because I can truly set it up so that it could grow on itself and I'll never touch the principal. That's what you would do. As for the switching of the house, the reason why it would be good for me is because the house is worth, essentially this place would pay for half the house. And in the end, the house would retain the value when the market drops better than this place. So it's a strategic move. I have a townhome. It's not going to retain the value in 5 years. A place on the lake with amenities, lakefront property, will retain the value longer. And in my case, because it brings so many amenities, it's a wash in terms of my outlay and investment. And I may have a rental property.
Sure.
But you see, that's what I'm telling you. It sounds like I'm just talking pie in the sky, but all of that is activity you have to do. So, it's not, you know, you have to go move, you have to go find the house, you got to sell this one. It's a bunch of junk you got to do. And I'm going to try to avoid it because I want to make sure that I can put myself in a position to, after I help some people I care about, is to make sure I set up a good estate plan so that I'm not spending the principal to a large degree and then devote my life to something above myself in terms of giving back. That's what my goal is. I don't want to spend it endlessly talking. The goal would be not to just continually figure out how to maintain and save my money. I want to kind of do, that's why I say it's a burden. I want to do that quick. I don't want to spend my time on that. I want to do that quickly enough so that all I have to do is spend my time devoted to something outside myself that I'm productive in, both with the radio program and other things, maybe even creating a nonprofit. And that's my own goal. And part of my salvation is join a church, since I'm appreciating this, because I want to keep myself in check and talk to people like you. You keep me in check. And there may
be. Do you have a long table?
What?
A long table.
A long table?
A long table. Or a picnic table, or a dining room table that's long.
I can make my dining room long.
I'm not. Could I switch the topic for 1 second?
Sure.
I saw something last night, and I thought of you. We can go back to this. You're right. You need the plan, but I thought of you, and I have to tell you this before. I had a fun show last night. We talked about traditions.
Right.
And just before I got on the show, Gary and I were watching something on YouTube, and it was holiday traditions. This was really weird, too, because I didn't search this. It just came up when I said YouTube into the thing, and it came up. This was on there.
It was random.
Well, yeah, I mean, talk about intuitive. It was downright spooky because I hadn't looked for anything like that. I'm usually listening to music, and this thing pops up, and it says holiday traditions around the world. And so it was, you know, predominantly Christian-based show, so they were showing what Christmas is like in different countries and some traditions, and in Christianity a lot of the traditions haven't changed a lot as much as in some other faiths as they've spread across the world and over time. But in any case, I saw something that made me think of you. I didn't know about this, and, you know, I'm Italian and Irish. Of course, you're Italian. And when they got to Italy, well, when they got to Italy, you know, there's that old joke about fruitcakes, that there's really only one and people pass it around, you know, to everybody for all time. This was hilarious. There was all these little old men in Italy, and they were using, I think, a picnic table or some kind of a, it was outdoors, it was some kind of long table, and they had a round fruitcake. And they were sliding it down, you know, at one end, sliding it down the table, kind of like shuffleboard. And what the game was, it's kind of a combo of bocce ball and shuffleboard, but with a fruitcake, is this tradition. They take the fruitcake and slide it down as far as they can down the table without it flipping off and going over the opposite end of the table. And the one closest to the end wins. And it cracked me up watching them because I've never heard of that before. But I thought of you and I started laughing because, as you pointed out before, we got a couple hosts that are Italian on the network, and I had just got done doing a show, so I was thinking about our Italian hosts, and I thought, I'm going to have to tell them about this fruitcake thing because old traditions are great. But if you're in a position where you... a change in circumstance, a change in lifestyle, if it has to do with brain injury, a change in family composition, there might be some old traditions you're not able to do anymore. And so, you know, several hosts have done shows on depression and suicide, which is prevalent around this time of year, so they're very relevant shows. But an alternative to that is, instead of wallowing too much in the past, is by being creative and thinking of some new traditions. So we were talking about the old and the new last night, but it was funny that I saw it right before I went on air, that YouTube, and saw the fruitcake tradition. And so you should get yourself a round fruitcake and just try sailing it down your long table and see if you can get it really close to the end without hurling it off the other side. Are you getting together with family for Christmas? You could take your fruitcake and have everyone do it.
Would they think you were a
fruitcake if you showed up with that?
I've showed up with worse. And also, it's funny you mentioned that. I kind of touched on that in my because I remember this was a Christmas show. I gave updates and stuff. I did have a small corona update only because it's relevant. And one of the ones I mentioned was the tradition of Western celebration of Christmas, and I alluded to the fact that in a sense Christmas has become so inundated with the celebration, you almost forget about the religious aspects of it. It did have a lot to do with Jesus and stuff, Christmas. And, I almost forgot that. For years, you almost forget that, and it becomes almost the insignificant. Even with people who are Christian, it's more the celebration and the gifts and all this other stuff. And we forget that was his birthday and all the things that go with that. And when I got into my stuff about my own success, I only shared that because of the ramifications. And that, in a sense, I'm not too sure that the way I went about investing was directly related to my injury.
in a sense, I'm not too sure I could have done what I did without the injury, because what the injury has cost me, and this is where I use that to get into how other people have done things post-injury, I'm not too sure you would be doing anything to do with this radio program if you didn't get injured. And
no.
I don't think, no, you agree.
I'd be managing your money. That's what I did for 25 years before.
Hey, well, say.
Now I'm just listening to it.
Got you. Well, but one of the things is, what I found, and it had to do with how I felt about getting fatigued on the holidays, I was sharing this with the audience, because in order to do what I did in terms of increasing my income, I can only do things in sporadic amounts. I can't work 8 consecutive hours. So I did the research. So like someone wakes up for a job, for 6 months I invested in research to buy the stock. That took a lot of hours, but I did it sporadic. If I had been non-injured, I never would have did it. No one would do it. I'm telling you, like you wouldn't have did this. So the injury, in a sense, caused my ability to do that. Because I funneled things, and if you really look at it objectively, since you're in financial planning, researching a stock is probably better done incrementally than just 8 hours here or 8 hours there, the way you would do if you were working full-time. So because you do it like that, you garner more information because you're doing it over a longer period of time. You're doing it sporadically, so you catch all the nuance. Does that make sense?
It does.
And
yeah.
So now, I also am faithful enough in God, even though I forgot that Christmas was his birthday, forgive me, God. I also went into the effects of that, the challenges that those things do, and also the planning to now have a whole list of others. Like when you began your volunteer work, it leads to one thing, which leads to another, which leads to another. Now, I started out doing this for one very good reason, though. It was necessity. And so I had to. Had I not done it, I would have been broke. And that's another thing I stress to my audience, that regardless of whether I stress that I have done it myself, and I always point them out, there's ways to take advantage of social welfare programs, you know, discounts on things. I've given out PAM foundations where I've saved money on things. I'm very creative about that. And there is support groups, and I say, and there's doctors. But even within the context of your life or your injuries, you have to take control and stock of your own existence through your independent, and not to overly depend on any one thing, because I find you will get disappointed. The government ain't going to come around and be mommy to you. Take my word for it. It's not happening. And now we do get some support, but in the end, you have to do the initiative yourself in order to take control of it. And had I not done that, I would have been in a worse position. And that's, you know, it's what you have to do. And I think God blessed me because I don't have a materialistic attitude. And my biggest goal in making the money was helping other people. Myself will be taken care of pretty fairly, straightforwardly. The rest of it is for doing things for other people and doing things for the humankind of all kind at some point. Not just to, you know, hang around people that want to, you know, shine their diamonds. It's not my type of thing. It's why I'm going to seek that. But other people have, other people have gone through similar things, only in different areas. And by the way, I did want to ask you a question. Sorry. And I did call you like a month ago, off hours. It's on the air, so you'll be limited to what you want to discuss. How are you doing health-wise?
better. I just got released from the doctor today. My foot will still be a little bum. You probably know from surgery, swelling and the pain can stay there for a lot more months, but the bone is 99% healed. So that was a long,
how
when you talk
how
about...
Sore, how sore was it when you got out of that surgery?
Well, I didn't have surgery. I just broke my foot in three places, and I wore a boot for 3 months.
How painful
crutches and
was
a boot
it?
For 3 months.
How painful was it during that 3 months? Bones are painful. Okay, I know. How painful?
It was painful. It was painful, but the way I put it to people that asked me, because they couldn't believe I walked for 2 days before. I thought maybe I sprained it when I fell, so I walked on it for 2 days before I went. The third day it was the size of a football, and it was black and blue, and I decided I should go to the doctor. And when they came in and said, you broke your foot in three places, I was in shock. You know, I was literally in shock. And at that moment, I had no idea how that was going to change my life over the next, that it was going to be, you know, 3-4 months, and how much it was going to change. It's my right foot, so I haven't been driving, you know, for 3 months, and I couldn't go down. Luckily, we live in a ranch, so there was no huge hardship with that, except just wearing the boot, you know, but I couldn't go down the basement, and that's where, you know, I tossed things like the holiday gifts coming from Amazon and the department stores and things like that. Downstairs, and I couldn't go down there. But I say, well, it's not as bad as a craniotomy, but it does hurt, and it's been a really long, over 3 months. But now I've been laughing because I'll have to send you, I don't know if I can send you a picture. I've had trouble texting you before, but I was making jokes about orthopedic shoes, and none of them look like it, but they're all ones that have...
By the way, Kim, do you have a smartphone?
I do.
You do have an
iPhone?
Guess what I'm... Mm-hmm. Just to show you how I'm still programmed to watch every dollar, and so how I'm not... Just because I've reach levels of money, I still, guess what I did over Thanksgiving? I saved myself $200 because I replaced the thermostat in my refrigerator, meaning I got the part online, and I had to defrost my refrigerator on Thanksgiving, which is why I wanted to leave my cousins and get back the next day. So I, you know, I bought a $14 pot to save my, you know, because to get a guy to come here to put it would have cost, you know, hundreds. And guess what? I finally am springing for. This is the truth. Went on a date, and I showed it to my doctor, cardiologist, about 6 months ago. And I had it from the hospital because my old phone went dead. Guess what I have is my form of communication. Just to show you
what?
How I can be a skinflint, a cheapo. I've got a flip phone. When the doctor saw it, 35-year-old doctor, he looks at it and he says, you got a flip phone. He wouldn't want to touch it. When I showed it to this woman, as I'm approaching a date, this is what glued me in. She says, what's that? It's almost like I brought a rotary phone out. She says, what's that? I says, it's a phone. She says, really? I think my grandmother had that. So, I'm
well, you
so
know
glad
what's
that.
Funny about that? I've
no,
got
no.
An
and
old...
One of the reasons why I need it, because I've accumulated and I need access to my stock account because I'm going to have to sell at a certain point when it reaches a big B. I need an iPhone. So I'm now marketing and looking for an iPhone. and I'm going to spring for it. But because that plus the reactions of people, like I said, when the doctors or any of us, Kim, it's the equivalent that if I looked at you, I said, you say, what's your number? And I say, it's Plaza 9, 40444.
That's funny.
You gotta laugh. Right. Here's this guy. And literally, the look on the girl face, the girl woman's face, when she saw, she didn't know what it was. Well, it's the equivalent to coming out with like a rotary phone. So, you know, and a matter of fact, I looked the other day, just to show you how the world changes. Do you know there's no more phone booths around? Do you know they used to have phone booths?
Yeah, there's
every...
not.
Well,
oh, I know. I know.
No, there's a site that has payphones listed in certain locations, like you put your city. There, in your city, there's a payphone. But so just to show you how materialistic I am, I'm antiquated. And the only reason I'm doing it is because as a strategic necessity, I'll need access for my profit and purpose to make sure I can sell it. So I need a backup to my computer and other than my iPad, which just works on Wi-Fi, and I got to get rid of my, by the way, with this antiquated cell phone, the technology from 30 years ago. The woman I'm approaching didn't know what it was. And the doctor that was my cardiologist knew what it was, but says, I don't know how to use it.
Oh, God. All you got to do is dial those. They're not hard.
But you have to, what kind of iPhone do you have?
Well, mine's an old one because I have a resentment. I'm a little bit ahead of you in that I've had a number of smartphones, but at 6S, and they're on 13 now, I held on 6S for two reasons. One of them is it's the last phone that you can plug in earbuds. After that, they took away the jack, so you had to get Bluetooth earbuds, so you got to charge the earbuds, you got to charge the phone and all of that stuff. But the biggest reason was they've trained a new generation in a way that I find I can't think of the word. Disgusting, perverse,
repugnant,
is not only do they have a monthly phone bill, but when they're quoted a price on their telephone, which is around $1,200 to get the latest and greatest of the iPhones, they quote it to them in the monthly payment. And so these kids now, just like we think nothing of paying our utility bill, that's something that's always going to be there, right? They've got kids groomed now. These kids that now are adults, not only children, but people in their 30s now that grew up with this technology are trained to have two bills every month, their service charge and their monthly payment for their telephone. I walked in because I was going to upgrade a couple of years ago, and it was a kid that worked, you know, in Verizon, and it wouldn't matter what store it was in. And I said, how much is a phone? You know, and I think back then I was looking at an 11 or a 10 or something. I said, how much is the phone? And he said, $1,100. I said, all right. Well, he told me it was 23 whatever a month, and I said, no, I don't want to know how much it is a month. I want to buy it. I'm not going to make a monthly payment out of a telephone, for Christ's sake. It's not a car or a house, okay? You know, I'm going to buy a phone. And he said, he looked at me like shocked. This kid was disheveled. He didn't know what to say. Well, you can't buy a phone. Well, I most certainly can buy a phone. Who would be stupid enough to make 2 monthly payments on the hardware
with interest
and the service?
With interest.
Yeah, that's what I said. And the kid said, well, I'm just used to it. I said, yeah, you and a whole crazy generation.
What's the trade-off there?
What don't you get to do, you know, because you're making 2 payments on your phone? Because you still bring home the same paycheck, right? So if you're making 2 payments like that, so I quit. I thought that was ridiculous. If they wouldn't let me just pay for a phone, buy a phone.
How much do you think I should spend on a phone?
One way you might get lucky is if you change
carriers,
yeah, excuse me, then a lot of them all the time, but particularly now around the holidays, are having really good deals. Like some are giving you for virtually nothing a phone to switch your service to them, or they're giving a better deal. And if they're not, I leave. You know, there's some companies now, you know, Apple, and when you see a lot of things on Amazon, as opposed to, say, you look up Macy's, everybody's having sales, right? But you don't see sales on Amazon. The price is the price. You know, and ballsy companies like Apple and a lot of those, Bose, you know, I have a lot of Bose headsets and things. I listen to music. You know, they don't feel like they have to budge on their price. You know, they've got a name. And they don't think, no matter where you look, it's the same price. They don't think they need to budge on their price. Now, I find that repugnant as well. But that's why I've still got a 6S. It's working, and I'll ride it until it's dead.
By the way, the same thing.
My suggestion to you is getting a new carrier, and you'll get a good deal on a phone.
Right. And if I'm with T-Mobile, I can go to AT&T and stuff like that, something like that.
I would look at Verizon if I were you. If you travel much, they've got the widest, next to T-Mobile, they've got the widest coverage area. But obviously, check for your area. But I'm no proponent.
What about? By the way, do these new iPhones, like the 13 you're talking about, do they have access? Will I be able to put my stock trade account as an app there that I can trade on there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It's a computer.
In other words, I'll be able to get the app for my Ameritrade, TG Ameritrade, on that account. Like my iPad, like my ThinkPad has, my Wi-Fi has.
The phone has that.
Hey, so how are you feeling? So your foot, what about your other physical issues? Are they okay?
Yeah, they're okay. It's been a while since we talked.
My one test came back negative,
so
okay,
after
okay.
I had a very painful biopsy, it was negative, and I just need to be checked every year. And then another one I did have to have some surgery for in a rather delicate area, and I got 6 hours of surgery awake and 13 shots to keep the area asleep because it kept waking up, and 42 stitches. And so to have that up at the top of my leg where your underwear lands, while my foot was broken and I was in a boot, I had 42 stitches up there. It was a you're bringing it back to me now. It was a much rougher 3 months than I thought.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's over. You know, it's over, thank God. So, but anyway,
what
it looks like your show is about two. Sorry, I just wanted to remind you of the clock. I just looked at it.
It's okay. It's not going to kill him. One other thing. It's, by the way, my dining room table I'm talking about, guess how old that is. Did I ever tell you?
How old?
Abraham Lincoln was probably about 12 years old when the table was functional and made.
Wow.
It's from 1830s. So Abe Lincoln would have been in his teens or thereabouts.
Dang, when you get your iPhone, you got to get a hold of me because it has a camera on it, and you'll be able to take a picture of that table and send it to me.
Yes, 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 yes. And look,
I'd love to see it. I love that stuff.
Yeah, and the liquor cabinet, these are collections from my mother, the liquor cabinet. She used it as a liquor cabinet. My grandfather did. I use it as just because I'm not a drinker. I use it for just putting plates in. Guess what it is? It's a radio from the 1890s. It's that big.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I'll take a picture of it. You'll see it. It's as big as a... Like I said, it could be a liquor cabinet.
Oh, hurry. Go get your new phone. Hurry, hurry. Go get that new phone.
And I have friends. I have my friends from Texas. He's a real redneck. He says, hey, Yankee, get up with it. Get an iPhone. Get up
with it. Hey, wait. I got to ask you something. Did you say that you have T-Mobile now?
Yes.
The only reason I ask,
they check
a couple
of
places, but, well, they all do, but there was a commercial on TV tonight. I was paying attention because if some great deal comes up where I feel like it's prudent to do an upgrade, I might, but one thing they said that was key with T-Mobile, and you might want to call them, it said, whether you're a new or existing customer. Now, that is new terminology because they're usually always screwing the loyal customers and just giving the deals to new customers to try to bring in new business, and they don't think about the people already on the books. That's been my problem with Verizon. We've been with Verizon for a long time. They do have one of the largest coverage areas.
Well, you know,
T-Mobile is nipping at their heels now. I'd try them both. But just tell them that your friend saw a commercial that says that they're giving a great deal for existing as well as new customers. And then if you say, well, that doesn't sound like a very good deal to me, I'm just going to give you a trick. That doesn't sound like a very good deal to me. I think I'm going to need to check with Verizon and a couple others. I'll get back to you. Then they'll say, well, wait a minute. And they will send you to the escalation department. That means the customer is threatened to leave. And someone then, the second person they connect you with, may give you a better deal than the first person that was the first line.
They were going to give me a deal, and in a sense, they messed me up because they said it was free, this phone, and then I get down to find out, no, it's $49, and then I would pay it if I kept it for a year. In other words, if I signed a contract and stayed for 2 years, they were going to give me the phone for free, okay, or for $49. One of the keys why I may choose T-Mobile and just get a phone where I pay for it cash, I have no contract with them, and I prefer that. A month to month. It costs me $35 a month for the service. I would rather not have a two-year contract. I don't like contracts with cable companies and stuff. Do you?
I'm resistant to it.
Well,
I'm
resistant, but I don't really mind because, I mean, when I look at it this way, I'm going to have a cell phone. You know, I've had a smartphone, even though it's not the latest and greatest. I've had a smartphone for years, and it doesn't bother me to have it. I'm going to have somewhere for 2 years.
Are you telling me they're all like that kid and they're all like the people that mess me up? They're all kind of dicks.
Yeah. Well, it's just the new world you were talking about earlier. You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter if the coverage plan, you know, like AT&T in our area is really crappy. If you go for a country drive, there's no coverage. But Verizon and T-Mobile seem to be the top two as far as coverage area. And if the coverage area, they all have a map on their website. And so look at the map on their website. If the coverage looks good to you and, you know, you get the contract and the terms are amenable to you, I wouldn't be afraid of having a 2-year contract because you're going to have the service. It's not like you're going to get rid of the cell phone once you have it. You're going to like it and you're going to,
right,
it's going to become a tool in your life.
Right, exactly.
So
yeah,
I do
exactly
know what you mean, but I wouldn't be afraid of that if it gets you a really great deal on the phone.
And the reason why I'm not getting it, it's because I have an iPad, but it only works on Wi-Fi, which means the phone would be able to be accessed anywhere, correct? In other words, you know what I mean? The pad, you have to be near a Wi-Fi. If you're not wearing Wi-Fi, it doesn't work. So
right,
the phone,
I paid
actually
for a deal for a while.
No,
monthly,
no, in other words,
I let it go, but it let you do it without Wi-Fi. There was another setting you could do anything. But you're right, on the telephone, you don't have to pay any extra for that. It'll work wherever.
Well, I don't pay any extra, but it only works if you're near a Wi-Fi. If you're not near a Wi-Fi or a connection, in other words, when you go into an office, if the office doesn't have a Wi-Fi there, it will work. So the phone would work anywhere, correct?
Yeah.
I have access.
I would. One tip I would give you, and maybe this will help the listeners also, when you're talking about doing anything, like I don't even log in and check my bank accounts. It's not like I can't, and it's not like the banks can't get hacked, but I don't know if you ever noticed with your Wi-Fi, like maybe come home and you've used Wi-Fi somewhere else, you know, people can, you know, bring up their screen and it shows the Wi-Fi that is in the area. My bottom line is make sure that you have the people at the store or someone who knows something about technology. Put the setting where your Wi-Fi is private, because otherwise your neighbor might be able to access your Wi-Fi or somebody that you're driving past on the street, and you don't want them being able to accidentally have access to those transactions and things you were talking about that you'd be doing on your telephone. That's one of the possible hazards of this new technology. It can be super convenient. It can also be one more way to get in some trouble. So there's settings. And
yeah, but the phone wouldn't be over the Wi-Fi. It would be over the telephone. So
it has a Wi-Fi setting too, though. It has a Wi-Fi setting, too, because, well, you'll see when you go look at them. They all have a Wi-Fi setting, and the phone, unless a certain setting is fixed on the telephone, it will automatically start searching for a Wi-Fi connection. Your phone will.
I see. In other words, is that how you get on the internet, is through a Wi-Fi?
That is one way, yes. And so if you don't want to do it that way, you need to talk to them about that and make sure that that setting's not on, because, yeah, I've seen that before on ours. I'm not a real techie, so my husband, thankfully I'm married to a real techie, but, you know, when we're home, we have it on Wi-Fi, because if you take a lot of pictures like I do, that's called data, and they allow you a certain amount of that. Internet is free, but things like I do, taking a zillion pictures and taking videos, and if you happen to wind up finding a game that you like, for example, my husband is hooked with Words with Friends. It's kind of like a Scrabble game. That stuff uses what they call data, and if they only allow you a certain amount, it's good if you get a contract with unlimited data, because then you don't have to worry about it. That's what I've got. But if you don't, and you do too many of those other things, then you might wind up getting some charges that you weren't expecting to get. And so when your phone uses Wi-Fi, then that doesn't count toward data. Texting, for example, is data. Taking pictures is data. Buying music on iTunes and listening to it, that's all data. So you want to get unlimited. Tell them you want unlimited everything.
I got you. By the way, one of the things over Thanksgiving, we talked about success and being humble. If you ever want to see four individuals who are the most humble people in the world in terms of regular humanity, go watch The Beatles Get Back, and you'll be blown away.
I'm going to do that. I saw a commercial for it, and it's on our Amazon Prime that we have on our TV. I can watch that for free, so maybe we'll do that this weekend. We're supposed to get some snow. Yuck.
You know why? Other than the fact that what it shows them is developing songs that are now classic. Way back then, from nothing, from just like a few chords or just a line, very rough takes, and them slowly working their way through them and turning them into masterpieces. But at the same time, you see the utter regularness and humility of them, and how hard they work, in the end, when they're together in this room, you see the pleasantness of them and the humility of them, except for one thing. There is one thing, is one of them does get very pissed off because he feels slighted, and he walks out, and people are sad for him because he does it. But in truth, there's a reason why he feels slighted. It's because he's the two dominant creative forces, and who do most of the work are Lennon and McCartney. And they have, it's not that they're nasty to him. It's just that they're just so much better. He doesn't have the capability to keep up with them. And you can see it. It's George Harrison. And he gets so pissed off.
Yeah,
But the truth of the matter is, if you look at it objectively, and they actually got together, they actually recorded them unbeknownst to them in the cafeteria where he left. He was so pissed off, and they're trying to say. And Lennon said to him, we're just a couple of hardheads. And, Lennon McCartney says, you've always been the boss. He says, I don't know about that. But, it's me and you. We kind of are just going to dominate him. And that's the way we are. We haven't thought about him. And they're showing at a very early age. Remember, they're only in their late 20s. By this point, they're superstars beyond belief. But when you see them in this working studio, they're dressed casually. They work extremely hard.
And they're very pleasant people. They're not jerks at all. Seriously. And
well, they were
extreme.
Just starting back then.
No. This is at This is when they broke up. They had already been successful. They already had finished their career.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they are mega stars, superstars, but they're so regular. Even when his girlfriend brings in the kid, they act just like normal people. They weren't arrogant. They worked extremely hard. And when one of them, just to show you how kind they were, Lennon and McCartney, who were the most talented ones in the band, and it's not fair that George Harrison did it. You know why? Because without them, he would never have made it. He was not good enough to make it. He was never as good a singer as them. And guess what? They were better songwriters for decades. So they created it.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see they're more talented than him. You can see it. And so there they are, too. And they're just discussing a way to make peace to bring him back. I think they're very considerate. And you realize the only reason they broke up was because they just got tired of being that anymore, and they wanted to go on and live their lives. It wasn't that they hated each other. They weren't that nasty to each other. Like I said, other bands, if some guitar player, they just tell them, get the hell out of here. I mean, they're so egotistical and crazy. They didn't come off like they were stoned and drunk. They came in every morning at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning to do the get filmed, and they were eating right there, and working, and they work like dogs, and it takes a lot of work. And when he had his kid there, they would let the kids sing songs, play their guitars, run around the studio. They were horsing around with them. They did not look like jerks, and they looked like they liked each other a lot. That doesn't mean that they didn't want to eventually move on. But the reason why I use them as an example of success is because of that, they kept their humility. They never took themselves that seriously. They might have been superstars to everyone else, but once they went into working and they were just regular, they were just acting like anyone else. They in other words, it didn't go to their heads. And then the final crux of it is, other than it being a class in how to write and sing songs, how to develop them, it's literally a master class, is you finally get the final product where they do the big concert on the roof, and it blows you away how good they are. That they took this from nothing, and in 3 weeks were good enough to perform the songs live like that. Just take them from nothing. It shows how good they were.
Can't wait to see it.
You agree,
well, I've
right?
got to cut out of here.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I do. I do. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yes.
Well, you have a merry one if I don't talk to you, and thank you.
Yeah. Merry you too, and thank you for calling. And I did want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and I'm glad you're getting over your health issues and stuff like that. And by the way, about a week ago, just to tell you, I ran on the tennis court, not this Monday, but the one before it, and I fell. So I almost went. Yeah, I did this. I literally fell on the concrete, just running, and crashed into the concrete. And so my wrist was so sore. It's still sore, but it was so painful that night. I thought I broke it. I didn't, but I was fortunate because as a tennis player, you know what I know to do when I fall? I never fight the fall. I roll with it. So I just rolled across the cement, and on my leg, I still have a scrape on my left leg because when you scrape cement with skin, guess what it does? It scrapes the skin away.
Well, I'm glad nothing broken.
Yes. Except my thumb finger was so sore, I couldn't play the guitar for a few weeks. So, anyway, well, look, Kimmy, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for calling. Merry Christmas to you if I don't speak to you before then. And are you going to do a Christmas program closer to Christmas?
Well, I kind of did one last night, and I have guests the next couple weeks, and then it'll actually be after Christmas, so it'll probably be a New Year's show the next time I have a co-host and would be doing a free-form show.
Should I call in? Should I get in touch with you on the New Year's? Should I get
the 29th, Wednesday the 29th will be the show where I'm not interviewing a guest. So yes, then we'll be talking about the New Year.
So maybe would be a good time to call in?
Sure.
Yeah, in other words, like ideas for the New Year's, new technology I like to talk about, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. We will call it Wake Up to the New Year. We will call it Woke to New Year. We'll call it Wake to the New Year.
Please. Hopefully,
right.
Woke will go away in the New Year. All right.
Good night. Have a good one. I'll put the 29th on my calendar.
Sounds good.
Happy to have. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.